Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for holding, and welcome to the ABN AMRO second quarter 2015 results conference call. At this moment, all participants are in listen-only mode. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. I would like to hand over the conference to Ms. Thijs Bakker. Go ahead, please.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the call. I've got in the room with me Gerrit Jan, Chairman of the bank, Kees van Dijkhuizen, CFO, and Wietse Reehoorn, Chief Risk Officer and Head of Strategy and Corporate Development, as well as Erik Bosmans, our Treasurer. We would like to start with the call.
Okay. Good afternoon, and welcome to this presentation on the second quarter and half-year results of 2015. We will use a short presentation, which is published on our website this morning. The full version of this presentation will be published later today. Given that we are currently preparing for an IPO, we are subject to certain legal requirements, and that may restrict us in our answers on your questions. That's all in the game. This relates especially to forward-looking questions and forward-looking answers. If you look at the Dutch economy, there are a lot of signals that the Dutch economy continues to recover. Dutch growth is above Eurozone average, and the ABN AMRO Group Economics Department expects GDP to grow by more than 2% this year and also next year. Consumer spending and Purchasing Managers' Index both are increasing, and the ongoing revival of the housing market, lower unemployment, improved confidence of consumers are characterizing the Dutch economy. We're quite positive on the economic developments of the Dutch economy. As 80% of our revenues is coming from the Dutch economy, this is also important for the bank. Looking at the financial results of the bank, the positive development of the last few quarters has continued. If you look at the underlying results year to date, we can note an amount of 1,144 million net profit, and that's 63% higher compared to the first half year of 2014. That's quite a good result. Especially the second quarter benefited from a sharp decline in impairments. We are pleased with that result. You can understand that probably. Also our shareholder is probably pleased because we intend to pay a 40% cash dividend over the full year 2015, and we will pay out 350 million as interim dividend. Looking at our financial targets, we can also see progress. If you look at a fully loaded Core 1 ratio, it was 14% at the end of June, which is 1.3 higher than a year before. Then it was still at 12.7. It's also well above our 2017 target range of 11.5%-12.5%. At the same time, we realize that a range of regulatory developments is currently coming our way. For one, the Basel proposal with respect to risk weightings, especially for mortgages and corporate loans. Discussion is still going on, consultation is still going on, so we don't know where it will end up, but this may influence the calculation of the Core 1 ratio. Also increasing buffer requirements set by regulators could have a significant impact on our capital position going forward. That's why we continue to focus on capital efficiency, and we will further strengthen our capital position. You can see that return on equity improved further. For the first half of 2015, the return on equity was 14.7%. Of course, we know that in the second half, we will get some extra regulatory levies that will be around 250 million gross. The bank tax, European Resolution Fund, and European Deposit Guarantee Scheme. If we include these levies and spread it over all the quarters, the return on equity for the first six months would have been 13%, which is still above our target range of 9%-12%. Looking at the cost-income ratio in the first half of 2015, we realized 57%, which is 2 percentage points lower than a year ago. Also here, if we spread out the regulatory cost for the year, the cost-income ratio for the first 6 months would have been around 60, which is at the top end of our range of 56 to 60% in 2017. Case will now lead you through the financial results in more detail with a focus on the second quarter.
Thank you very much, Gerard. If we look at slide 8 results, you can see a brief overview of the second quarter and first half year results. As already mentioned, profit in the second quarter was 600 million, up 86% from the second quarter of last year. Profit for the first half year was 1,144 million, up 63% from the first half of last year. And if we go to the main line items, first, of course, interest income, which is around 75% of our operating income. You can see on slide 9 that net interest income in the second quarter is benefiting from continued higher asset margins and to a lesser extent to an increase in asset volumes. Compared to the first quarter of 2015, NII is 2% lower due to two non-recurring interest provisions. And excluding these non-recurring items, NII continued to grow, and the NIM would not have declined. If we go to fees, around 20% of our operating income. Fee income you can find on slide 10. That was 8% higher than the second quarter of last year. This increase was primarily recorded in private banking. If we compare to the first quarter, fee income was 3% lower, and that was mainly because corporate finance fees came down from the high levels in the beginning of the year. Other operating income increased primarily due to higher CVA, DVA, and FVA income. Then if we go to the expenses, moving to slide 11, expenses are up 7% compared to the second quarter of last year. 4% rise in personnel expense, mainly due to higher pension costs following the low interest rates. Pension expenses are 18 million higher in the second quarter than in the second quarter of 2014. The increase in other expenses also reflect higher project costs for IT and internal optimizations projects. Then if we go to the impairments, slide 12, you can see impairment charges for the second quarter totaled only 34 million. This was exceptionally low, and we will further elaborate on that. Slide 13, with the results of the business units, you can see that retail banking further increased and particularly benefited from a decline in impairments to only 3 million. Underlying profitability improved by 23% compared to the second quarter of last year, and it improved to 342 million. Compared to the second quarter of last year, mortgage market margins improved. Private banking underlying profit increased by 64% to 72 million compared to the second quarter of last year, reflecting higher operating income on the back of improved stock market conditions. Impairments showed a release. Corporate banking had a strong quarter, and as you can see, with 249 million compared to 32 last year, and we are of course very happy that now also corporate banking makes these good results. Impairments came down sharply and operating income increased by 21%. Number of loan applications for small enterprises with a turnover of 1 to 30 million who are part of our segment of commercial clients. Commercial clients has a turnover of 1 to 250. They continue to show a slow increase. And especially the level of acceptance is now improving. We get better proposals these days. In recent years, you know, we have seen a decline in our commercial clients' loan book. This year, year to date, we see a stabilization more or less of the book. And if we go to the capital ambitions, fully loaded leverage ratio decreased to 3.1%. Guarantees provided by ABN AMRO Clearing Bank to clients need to be included in the exposure measure as a derivative exposure. As a result, the exposure measure increased with 53 billion and this resulted in a decline of the leverage ratio. We will, of course, comply with regulatory guidance. Current guidance set by the regulator for the leverage ratio is 4% in 2018, and we want to reach this by retained earnings, possible AT1 issuances, and reducing the exposure measure. Based on our current understanding of the MREL rules, we will aim to reach 8% by 2018. We can reach this through capital retention and issuance of subordinated debt. Of course, we will actively monitor regulatory capital developments also on TLAC during this process. Wietse will now elaborate on impairment costs and risk developments.
Okay, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, good morning or good afternoon. Let me go quickly back to slide 12. Improved economic conditions in the Netherlands, combined with an intensive monitoring of clients and a balanced portfolio intake, it all resulted in a substantial decline in impairments to 34 million this quarter. Exceptionally low number, also because the impairment charge includes a sizable release from the so-called incurred but not identified provision. That's an IFRS-based provision. This provision is reassessed quarterly based upon losses recorded in the previous 12 months. This quarter, 107 million was released, mainly within retail banking and commercial clients. In Q2 2014, we saw an IPNI release of 1 million euro. Given the considerable IPNI release this quarter, we do not expect the current level of impairments to be representative for the remainder of the year. A couple of words on slide 15 on the risk ratios. The cost of risk came down to 5 basis points, lowest level since the legal merger in 2010. This trend is also seen in the impaired ratio for the customer loan book, which declined to 2.6% from 2.8% at the end of the last quarter. Lower inflow and continuous higher outflow resulted in a further decrease in the impaired ratio for residential mortgages to 0.8%. The higher outflow is a result of an increased outflow of clients to the performing portfolio, as well as higher demand for houses, which enable us faster settlement of files in the long-term arrears. The impaired ratio for consumer loans remains unchanged, while for corporate loans it decreased to 5.4%. All sub-portfolios within corporate loans show a downward trend, except for medium-sized commercial clients, where the level of impaired files remains stable. In absolute terms, the level of impaired loans for the client loan portfolio declined by 372 million compared to Q1. Total coverage ratio increased to 57.3%. Not all sectors benefit from the recovery of the Dutch economy. Retail, commercial, real estate, and transport and logistics still struggle. Some remarks on the mortgage book. I'm slide 16. Stricter income calculations in the acceptance criteria of mortgages and a further lowering of the NHG limit as per the 1st of July resulted in high new production. The number of houses sold was up 90.5% versus Q2 last year. Toward the end of the second quarter, house prices were 0.8% higher compared to the last quarter. For ABN AMRO mortgage production, volume increased by 51% compared to the same period last year. Our market share in the second quarter was 23%, by that we were market leader in new production. Reflecting the change in the Dutch fiscal mortgage regime, contractual repayments continue to grow gradually. Extra redemptions are returning to normalized levels. Past due and impaired mortgages exposures trend down. The annualized cost of risk came to a release this quarter of 6 basis points. This includes an IPNI release. The average loan-to-market value of the portfolio was stable compared to last quarter at 82%. The average loan-to-market value excluding NHG-guaranteed mortgages remained at 78%. The mortgage loans with a loan-to-market value higher than 100% declined by 3.4 billion since year-end 2014. Of which 2.4 billion in the last quarter. The portion of mortgage loans with a loan-to-value market above 110% continued to decline, also because there is no more inflow in the highest bucket as a consequence of the new mortgage regulation. The mortgage book consists of around a quarter of NHG guaranteed mortgages. NHG is still good for approximately 46% of the new production. Moving on to slide 17, some information on ECT clients. As we receive many questions on the ECT segment, we provide some information this time here. The ECT client portfolio slightly decreased by 0.9% this quarter because of the depreciation of the US dollar with 4% in this quarter. Excluding the depreciation, the loan book increased. Impairments for ECT remain low relatively to the portfolio size at 18 million over a total loan portfolio of 25.2 billion in Q2, that is annualized 28 basis points cost of risk. I'd like to hand over to Gerrit for a wrap-up.
Okay, thank you, Witse. There's not so much I can say about the IPO other than that we are busy with internal preparations and they're well on track. I would like to conclude by saying that we are pleased with the results. It was the most profitable half year since the bank was created. Operating profit further improved, and the improvement of the Dutch economy in combination with active management of our loan portfolios is paying off in lower impairments in almost all portfolios. So our financial performance gives me confidence in the future. Thank you for participating in this call, and I hope we can now get open for questions. As I said, we will be restricted in our answering because of IPO preparation.
Ladies and gentlemen, we will start the question and answer session now. If you have a question, please press star 1. I repeat, for star 1 for any questions. Please go ahead. First question from Mr. Cor Kluis from Rabobank. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Cor Kluis, Rabobank. I got a few questions. First of all, on the risk-weighted assets, we saw there an increase of 1.75 billion on the credit side for model changes. And it seems to that that's really in commercial banking, international clients, commercial banking, total field. Can you explain what this exactly was? What changed, and is this a one-off, or is this a total model that will be adjusted forward that we can expect further model changes going forward? That's my first question. And my second question is more, maybe also a little bit more operational. The IT cost due to higher project cost, as you mentioned, was somewhat higher. You also show a lot of innovations, et cetera, in the press release on which you're working. Can you explain why that is, and project, is that a one quarter project, a 1 year or a multi-year project? So to what extent is this recurring, and where are you're basically investing in? And my last question is about ECT. Thanks for the additional disclosure on that subject. On the 25 billion, can you maybe highlight which part, given the clear decline in oil and commodity prices, which part you're really focusing on? And because if there would be extra impairments or defaults, it will probably be on only a very small part of that book. Can you give me some clarity on your way of thinking on that from a risk point of view? That were my questions.
Okay. Shall I start with IT and then Witse will take the model changes? IT costs relate to digitalization in order to improve the accessibility for consumers and also our business clients for the bank. And at the same time, it also relates to renewal of our infrastructure, our internal infrastructure, so to say, the core banking system. This is a multi-annual program. We expect in 2016 that the highest level of investment will be reached. It will be a bit higher than this year. And then it will gradually go down.
Let me comment on the question as to the model changes. The change indeed in risk-weighted assets is mainly coming from a change in credit risk, actually, and a result of an increase in corporate banking of around 5.4 billion and a decrease in retail banking. It mainly deals with the fact that from time to time, on a very regular basis, also let's say in good consultation with the regulator, we're updating models. So we're reviewing a payday, LGD, backtesting what we have seen in the previous 6 to 12 months. And that, of course, is a continuous improvement which we are making. The question as to the ECT book, what we currently see there. Again, the portfolio was down versus last quarter, but I mean, if you compare it to the year end, it was up with almost 30.5%. Roughly, it's 95% in dollars, so it shows the exposure also to the currency impact there. What we mainly see in terms of risk is that the drop in oil prices only have an effect on our energy portfolio, which is approximately 4.5 billion outstanding on the whole 25. Again, there you have around 25% of that 4.4 billion is in what we call the upstream segment. There we are monitoring the clients quite well. I'm not concerned there. Why is that? Because we have a very semi-annual redetermination of the price deck, the securities, which is protecting actually us as a lender against the downward prices. The outlook in the sense that oil prices are still volatile, so, well, we have a close watch on that portfolio, but if you have seen the impairments over the last quarter, which were 18 million in basis points, annualized 28 basis points. And if you compare that, what we have shown you in an earlier investor presentation, that over, let's say, an 10-year period, we have produced an ECT, a very low impairment number, around 10 basis points. And again, that is a client book off and on balance sheet. I would like to leave it for.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you.
Welcome.
Next question, Mr. Albert Ploeg, ING. Mr. Ploeg, go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon all. A couple of questions from my end. The first one is on the net interest income and net interest margin. Can you maybe give a little bit insight in the impact from the current mortgage refinancing and prepayments on the NII in the first half and potentially going forward? Like the amortization of some hedges that might have been broken, for example. That's my first question. My second question is: you already mentioned in the presentation on the leverage ratio, the definition has been changed a little bit in terms of calculation. You mentioned also now for the first time also some new targets based on 2018. Can you maybe give somewhat color on the line on the mentioning of the to manage the exposure measure? So basically, of course, maybe changing the composition of the balance sheet a little bit to reach also the leverage ratio. What you mean by that that comment? And finally, a question on, let's say, regulation in general and also the dividend. The dividend payout has been 40%. Given the uncertainties outstanding, is this basically the kind of payout ratio you feel now most comfortable with? Also, a little bit looking ahead, and I can answer, maybe you cannot comment on that specific question. Thank you.
Yep. Case, net interest income?
Yeah, with respect to, thank you. With respect to the net interest income and the margin, as mentioned, we have seen a further increase of the back book because a large part of mortgages in our mortgage book are 10-year mortgages, and spreads and margins 10 years ago in 2005 and also, by the way, in 2006 and the years before were much lower than they are today. So there is still repricing in that book, but of course that will fade out some moment in time going forward. There are no issues with broken hedges or something like that. With respect to the leverage ratio, the 53 billion, that is a conservative approach from our side. So we will discuss this further with EBA and regulators. But from a conservative point of view, we've taken it on board. It actually means that we have now taken on board the guarantees from our clearing clients to the Central Clearing Institute. Well, those guarantees are well collateralized. So we think that this is not the right approach, a right interpretation. However, as long as we are not certain about that, we've taken a conservative stance here. And with respect to dividend, Gerrit, I would like to hand over to you.
Yep. Dividend is expected to be 40% payout, which means that 60% of profit is retained. So we can combine this 40% dividend with increasing equity and also strengthening our balance sheet. So we think this is a reasonable division between retained profit and paid out profit, also because our balance sheet is expected to grow modestly. Mortgage portfolio, which is quite dominant on our balance sheet, is around about stabilization, maybe a small growth. So that means that the total balance sheet will also show a reasonable, modest growth. So, in our opinion, this is quite compatible with strengthening the balance sheet.
Okay, thank you. And maybe one small follow-up on the net interest margin. I think in the presentation it was mentioned that if you adjust for non-recurring items like some provisions that were taken, that actually the absolute level was actually a little bit up, and that the NIM underlying was basically flat compared to Q1. Can you maybe give a bit more color on what, let's say, the NIM drivers, especially in retail and corporate, because it seems that I think on both divisions, actually, then the NIMs look to be flat Q on Q, if that's a correct conclusion.
Yeah, I think your assessment is right. Indeed, if you correct for the non-recurring provisions, it's more or less the decline in the NIM compared to the first quarter and compared to the second quarter of last year would not appear. With respect to retail, the drivers are, as mentioned, margins in the retail, not so much volumes, more or less stabilization, as Gerrit referred to. And with respect to the corporate book, there is still some repricing there, but also a little volume growth. So those are the drivers. And that's I think, the main drivers.
Yeah. Okay, clear. Thank you.
Next question, Mr. Jean-Pierre Lambert from Keefe, Bruyette and Woods. Please go ahead, sir.
Yes, hello. A few questions on my part, if possible. The first one is the nature of the non-recurring interest provisions in retail banking. I guess it's around 60 million, and it's about a mismatch or a different way of calculating the net interest income versus your counterparts. Second question is related to the clearing business. Are you considering taking mitigation measures for some activities in light of the impact, potential impact on the leverage ratio? And the third question is the NII in private banking has seen a quarter-on-quarter decline of 8%. I presume there must be a one-off element there. Thank you.
Shall I start with interest in the retail? Indeed, we mentioned there that there is a decline in the retail business due to a non-recurring provision. The amount we do not disclose, but what we mention is that this decline from a net interest of 20 million would not be there when this provision would not have been taken. So in that sense, there's no decline in interest in retail banking in that respect. And then clearing.
Shall I comment on that, yeah. Kees? Your question was, are we taking there at this moment mitigation actions? At this moment, the only action we are taking there is in discussion with the ECB, whether to clear this discussion and whether the quite legal interpretation, actually, which has led to the situation that the leverage ratio had this decrease, whether that will upheld. So we are in the midst of that discussion.
Very good. And then the NII in private banking, the decline quarter on quarter, if there wasn't a one-off element.
Yeah, there definitely is a one-off element, so we do not see it as a new trend or something.
Great, thank you.
Next question, Mr. Benoit Pétrarque from Kepler Cheuvreux. Please, go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon, Benoit Pétrarque from Kepler. So a couple of questions on my side as well. On the, first of all, to come back on the leverage ratio, I was just trying to understand whether you have been the initiator of this review or your regulator came with this proposal. And you, in your discussion with the current discussion with the ECB, you know, how much total exposure could be, you know, becoming lower potentially if you are getting what you want to get, i.e., are you expecting to go back to the 3.5% leverage ratio you where you were the previous quarter, or you have made more adjustments in your leverage ratio? And going on that subject, versus 4%, it's a 4.6 billion shortfall of equity now. I think you can put probably close to 2 billion additional tier one at some point. So, you know, could you tell us a bit what you think in terms of where your equity base will go going forward? And to come back to this dividend question and payout questions, I mean, are you restricted in a way to pay more than 40% because of this this leverage ratio? Second question will be on the NIM going forward. Actually, not going forward because I don't want to. I want to, you to answer the question, but more to on your ILM policy. Let's say I think you have a 40 billion bond portfolio. I was wanted to understand a little bit how much of this portfolio will mature each year going forward. So could you give us a bit of an idea of the duration of your bond portfolio, please? And then just finally on the ECT exposure, could you just tell us a bit how much is really short-term, i.e. trade finance related stuff which will mature in 6 months, and what is more kind of long-term exposure? Thank you.
Maybe I start with the regulator and the discussion about leverage ratio definition and what the impact of that could be. Well, ideally, of course, the impact would be that this 55 billion we now added to the denominator will be skipped again. I think there are also good arguments to discuss the issue. Because in general terms, everybody is promoting that that instead of over-the-counter, we should do more clearing through clearing platforms, and this relates to clients of us using clearing platforms. So this would be quite a setback for the idea that more and more should go through open public clearing platform. So I hope this argument will also be taken into account. But we don't know the outcome of that discussion. And as Kees said, conservatively, we put this 55 billion, we added it on our exposure measure. Looking at the 4% target, there are, of course, several routes to that. The first is to look at the denominator of the off-balance sheet elements of the denominator. That will be a priority. Also, this discussion as the regulator makes part of that. Second is retained profit. And the third is alternate Tier 1. So these are the three elements which can be brought into play in order to gradually reach the 4%. And as I said earlier, the payout ratio of 4% still means that we retain 60% of our profits, so we aim also to grow our core bond ratio in the coming period.
When do you expect the regulator to come back to you on this issue?
I don't know. Actually, I don't know. We are not, of course, the only institution who would be handicapped by this approach. There are also other clearing banks with clearing activity. So this will be part of a more general discussion probably.
Then a policy on the liquidity buffer, which contains indeed 40 billion in let's say investments, of which around about 30 billion is long and 10 billion is short. The duration of the long-term portfolio is slightly below 7 years, and this portfolio is asset swapped, so basically we only run a credit spread risk in this portfolio. The 10 billion is short-term invested. There we aim for better returns than the minus 20 we have at the ECB, and we are successfully doing this so far, but you can imagine that this is increasingly difficult since we are not the only ones looking for yield better than minus 20. Is that a sufficient answer to your question?
Yeah, thank you very much.
Then I think your last question was as to ECT and the tenors of the financing there. Actually, that's not what we disclose. I can give you a steer only in that that sense, that half of that portfolio of 25 billion is commodity financing. And the predominantly, that is short-term, either 6 to 12, self-liquidating type of commodity financing, letters of credit, et cetera, et cetera. The energy part of the portfolio, which is around 4.4 billion, has somewhat more of a medium-term nature. And the remaining part, which is transportation, which is shipping, for example, is also from a more medium-term nature.
So in a cycle where price is going down significantly, would you expect your volumes to become much, you know, much more challenging in the short term?
Not challenging in the sense, if you mean with challenging lower, then the answer is probably yes on the basis of the current client basis in terms of the commodity clients, because if prices are lower, their working capital requirements are lower, so the financing volumes are indeed lower, that is correct. But that is not the situation today for the transportation portfolio as well as for the energy portfolio.
Thank you very much.
Next question, Mr. Lee Street from Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Hello, good afternoon, and thank you for hosting the call. I have three questions, please. First one, quite a specific one. After the announcements last week on Tier 2, could you confirm whether you believe a regulatory event has actually occurred for those Tier 2 bonds? And if it has, do you think you could use substitution and variation language to make them requalify as Tier 2? Secondly, could you give us an update in terms of what you're thinking with regards to issuance for both senior and subordinated debt for the remainder of the year? And finally, a bigger picture question. We obviously had the Tier 2 announcement last week, you know, the increase in leverage exposure today. Is this just coincidental, getting these things happening together, or is there, you know, is there a review, a specific review of ABN going on? I suppose I'm asking you how have these matters come to light, and you know, which seem to just be impacting you at the moment. That'd be my three questions. Thank you.
Let me first answer the first question on, let's say, the regulatory part of the call. We are still looking into it, and what we again would like to stress is that we will not exercise the reg call. At least we do not intend to. Second, as Gerrit Salom already stated in the very beginning of this call, I cannot give any forward-looking statements, so also on funding, I can't. And I had difficulties understanding your last question about Tier 2, so could you please rephrase what this was exactly about?
Okay, so the final one is saying we had the announcement last week on Tier 2. We've had an increase in leverage exposure today. Both of these seem to be driven by the regulator. So I was wondering whether there's a review of ABN that's ongoing, or if not, just how these matters, you know, came to the regulator's attention and how they got brought up. I was just trying to understand whether, you know, there's anything else that we might be expecting.
Yeah, right. Okay, that's clear. No, this is pure coincidence. The Tier 2 discussion started with a Supreme Court ruling in March, and that was a reason for regulators to look into the 403 at ABN AMRO and other banks. So that was that. And leverage is very recently... And the Supreme Court ruling, by the way, was an SNS ruling. So it was on S&S, not on us. The discussion on leverage ratio is actually quite recent, new interpretation. You get every month, to be honest, more or less, new guidance from EBA, how to interpret all the new LCRs, NSFRs, LRs, you name it. And so then we look at those new guidance and then take that into account best effort. And when we do it conservatively.
Okay, that is very clear. Thank you very much for your answers.
Next question, Mr. Matthias De Witt from KBCS. Please, go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. Matthias De Witt, KBC Securities. I had a question on the net interest margins, mortgage margins in particular. I noticed that there was some press comments around eroding front book spreads. So I just wonder what you've witnessed during the quarter and more recently, and how big a difference there still is between the margin on the front book compared to the average margin on the outstanding mortgage loans. Then on capital, you mentioned during the call that on top of the Basel proposals, you are that requirements are increasing. Could you be a bit more specific in this respect? Mainly TLAC leverage you were referring to, or is it also on CET1 requirements? And then lastly, on mortgage LTVs, I noticed that the proportion of loans with the loan-to-value above 100% is coming down quite quickly. How fast do you expect this part of the book to decline further, considering that there is no new production and that people prepay and that house prices recover? So maybe there is an internal forecast you made and which you could share with us on this topic. Thank you.
Yes. With respect to the mortgage, indeed, there has been discussion in the newspaper here last week. I think a study from University of Amsterdam, where it said that spreads, that margins were down compared to the beginning of the year. Well, that is correct. We think that that's what we see due to decline of the interest rate. However, that does not mean that when a old 10-year mortgage comes up for renewal, that we do not make a good margin on that, and at least a better, clearly better margin than 10 years ago. So there is still repricing. I cannot inform you about how far the back book is from the new repricing. That is too much guidance for the future. With respect to capital and the Basel proposals, I think the mentioning we do of this regulatory uncertainty is, by the way, related to a lot of things. So the Basel IV papers in consultation, as you know, on risk weights and standardized approach. But also on MREL, there is further guidance from regulators on TLAC. We expect it soon. So it's actually everything, and so it relates to Core Tier 1. It relates to leverage ratio, to MREL and TLAC. It relates to almost all the indices at this moment in time, and that's the reason why, while that uncertainty is there, that we have a buffer, as you know, higher than our, we are at 14, Core Tier 1 at the moment, as an example, which is above our target, and we think that is that's good, given all this uncertainty. And as Gerard already referred to, we're not going to dividend out, of course. We retain money in the bank, and that means that we also increase our Core Tier 1.
Perhaps your last question as to loan to market value of the mortgage book. Let me answer that by explaining to you what is the trend today. And the trend today, what you have seen in the book, is increasingly redeemable mortgages are replacing other mortgages. At this moment, it's 10% of the book, whilst a couple of years ago it was 5% of the book. today that is caused by the fact, of course, of the new fiscal regime. Of course, another effect of today is the rise in house prices, which of course also had the effect on the current loan-to-market value of the portfolio. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Next question, Ms. Anke Reingen from Royal Bank of Canada. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. I just had two small questions, please. The first is on your deposit base in retail banking. You saw quite a nice increase, and I just wondered if it's driven by any one-off or is this like a trend? And then secondly, when you mentioned on your higher risk weightings in international banking within corporate banking, was the driver of the model review a particular portfolio or was it across the board? Thank you very much.
Maybe on retail savings, there is a seasonal pattern. In the Netherlands, we have in our wage system a holiday allowance, and that's paid out in May. So in the second quarter, there always tends to be a kind of peak in new savings, which gradually runs out later in the year.
The second question was as to the model change. We never go into detail as to what kind of exact type of models and what changes. But again, this is an regular model change which we have been implementing in the book.
Okay, thank you.
Awesome.
Next question, Mr. Andreas van Emden from Peel Hunt. Please go ahead.
Yes, hello, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my questions. I've got two questions about the Dutch retail banking business. The first one is on your branch network. You mentioned that there was a further reduction in your branches in the Netherlands. Could you maybe discuss your strategy around the branch network in the Netherlands and how you're dealing with direct banking? And the second question is coming back to your loan portfolio and your LTVs that are above 110%. Have you done any stress testing on the impact of a significant rise in interest rates and whether this would materially affect the impairment ratios on your mortgage book? Thank you very much.
Okay, let me answer the first one. We are still gradually reducing the number of branches. And that's also because digitalization leads to less and less people coming to the bank. We have ample opportunities for direct banking, and we are increasing those opportunities also by, for example, advice on distance through WebEx, which is very successful in also mortgage advice, but we will extend that also in other areas. So the people who have a phobia to visit a branch will be completely served also through other means than visiting a branch. We don't know exactly where it will end up, but gradually the tendency to reduce the number of branches is not over yet.
And have you earmarked in your current plans and any savings from a further reduction of that branch network?
Yes.
And how material would they be? In percentage terms of your cost-income ratio, how material is that that development?
It's not extremely material because it's the smaller branches which are closed.
All right. Thank you very much.
Your other question, I believe, was on the stress testing of the mortgage book.
Yeah.
On a regular basis, we run internal stress tests, but I can mention, I guess, also the public made stress test of the ECB actually last year, where quite severe parameters were being put into the models and as a whole, actually, so the books, including the mortgage book. We came out quite good at a level of core equity tier 1, 9.5, while the hurdle was 5.5. So that gives you an indication, I would say, where we are actually in terms of stress testing our books and in particular our mortgage book.
All right. Thank you very much.
Next question, Mr. Arturo de Frias from Santander. Please go ahead, sir.
Yes, hi. Good afternoon. I wanted to discuss a little detail the dividend dynamics. If possible, you have mentioned that you think 40% payout is a good equilibrium for the medium term in terms of generating capital and also funding the growth. However, if obviously this is always risky, but if we consider that a mid-teens ROE is what is going to be the norm in the medium term, let's say low teens, not to be too aggressive, retaining 60% of that would imply retaining like, or let's say would imply funding 7 or 8% risk-weighted assets growth in the medium term, which I think looks too high. So I don't know, maybe the other possibility is that you want to be prudent in the short term because of all these regulatory concerns, risk-weighted asset inflation, changes in the leverage exposure, etc. But at the same time, you mentioned that your current Core Tier 1 of 14, around 14, is already protecting you from regulatory change. So my question would be, is your 40% payout driven by regulatory concern, or is your 40% payout driven by your view that in the medium term you will be able to grow RWAs by 6-7%? Thank you.
The 40% payout is already agreed some years ago with the present shareholder, and for the future I'll have to refer you to our prospectus.
Okay, that makes sense. Thank you.
Next question, Mr. Srinivas Narayanan from the Royal Bank of Scotland. Please go ahead, sir.
Good afternoon. I had a follow-up question on the recent announcement regarding the Tier 2 instruments that were excluded from the capital ratio. It was clear in the statement that they affect the total capital ratio but do not appear to affect the TLAC or MREL requirement. But if you could like give some more clarity on the differences and why we think that they wouldn't affect the TLAC requirement, it would be very helpful.
Okay. Concerns a few different instruments. There are three instruments issued prior to, CRR getting law December 31st in 2011. Those instruments, which are stated in the press release, are, now due for amortization. Then second, that's the instrument issued in 2012. Because of the 403 declaration, as was already explained in this call, which is no longer valid, these instruments are no longer valid as Tier 2 capital. And those two effects combined have caused a loss of 3.4 billion in our total capital position. But all those instruments, inclusive the part which is now, amortizing, are still MREL and TLAC eligible. All the instruments, the two issued after we have withdrawn our 403 declaration as of June 1st this year, are fully eligible for Tier 2 capital instruments as well as MREL and TLAC eligible. That's in a nutshell, I think, what you would like to hear.
That's very helpful. I just have one follow-up question on that. So given that the total capital ratio has reduced because of this, can we expect any liability management or is it possible for these instruments to be amended, to brought back in the to be made eligible again? Is it possible?
Already stated, we are not giving any forward-looking statements, so this is one of them. So unfortunately, I cannot comment on this, and we never comment on liability management transactions because this is obviously sensitive market price information. So Unfortunately, that's the only answer I can give.
Thank you.
It appears there are no more questions. Yes, there's still one follow-up question. A question from Mr. Aditya Bhagat from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, and thanks for the question. Just a follow-up on your guidance on the leverage ratio, which you mentioned part of that will be met by retained earnings. But again, you're well above your core equity tier one targets. So just wanted to understand how to look at your core equity tier one ratio targets in respect of also building your leverage with retained earnings.
Well, if you look at the core one equity target, we are above our target for 2017. But here we are waiting also for the outcomes of the consultation on the Basel IV proposals. So that's a reason to be conservative in that respect too.
Very helpful. Thank you.
There are no further questions, Mr. Chairperson. Please continue.
Okay, if there are no further questions, I would like to thank you all for your attention and for your questions, and hope to see you in the near future.
This concludes the ABN AMRO conference call. Thank you for attending. You can disconnect your line now. You all have a nice day. Thank you.